You sure didn't hear much of this style of conservatism at the Republican National Convention.
Things are here and there a little better, and things are here a little bit worse, and things here and there are really quite a lot worse. Since 1960, there's been a 560% increase in violent crime, more than a 400% increase in illegitimate births, a quadrupling of divorce rates, a tripling of the percentage of children living in single-parent homes, and a drop of 80 points in SAT. Manifestly, there has been a correlation between federal disbursements and the general welfare, but it has been a negative correlation.
In 2016, the Ivy League smugness of the late William F. Buckley has been absent from the GOP after being central to the brand for decades. After a major gaffe on Ukraine, Donald Trump is further proving that he has alarmingly little knowledge about the job he's trying to secure. Max Boot, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, thinks that Trump is the creation of years of the Republican Party's anti-intellectualism. Dating back to the 1950s, Boot argues that the Republican Party has worn a know-nothing facade to appeal to ordinary Americans. Now, Boot says, in an op-ed in the New York Times titled "How the Stupid Party Created Donald Trump," the GOP is no longer all talk. They have truly created a know-nothing candidate. Max Boot is here today to talk us through his argument on how years of GOP politics has led us to this precise moment.
Actually, it's been part of the Republican Party brand for a long time to be, you know, the just folks party. And, you know, Republicans going all the way back to Eisenhower have masqueraded by pretending to be dumber than they actually were. And by attacking, you know, elite intellectuals and snobs and so forth, trying to identify with the common man. This is a strategy pursued by Richard Nixon, by Ronald Reagan, by George W. Bush, by all these Republican leaders. But here's the difference. Those leaders were not themselves actually stupid or ignorant. I mean, you think about people like Eisenhower and Nixon, they were actually incredibly worldly, sophisticated, knowledgeable. The problem is that Donald Trump is every bit as ignorant in reality as his predecessors only pretended to be. You know, in a way, the joke's kind of on the Republican Party, because after masquerading for decades, the Republican Party has actually become the stupid party.
Is that to say that voters for Trump are stupid?
There's no doubt that he appeals to people without college degrees, the least educated segment of the population. They're not necessarily stupid. They're just not very knowledgeable. And I think they're being taken for a ride by Trump, who claims that he can solve all their problems when he can't. He can't even begin to solve their problems. And in fact, he will make their problems a lot worse with his policies, such as protectionism, isolationism, nativism, xenophobia. All these things will make America much poorer and much less safe. But I think he's guilt a lot of people into thinking that I alone can solve, you know, his mantra.
But when the National Review published this whole big thing about how Donald Trump, for a thousand reasons, could not possibly be the nominee of the GOP, it only helped him. That the more you say he's dumb, the more his constituency says, leave us alone, man, we're going to win.
Yeah, there's no question that he is appealing to this hardcore populist group, especially within the Republican Party. To some extent, there are some Democrats who fall into that camp as well. And so that every time they see those that they identify as being intellectuals or elites or snobs or what have you, anytime they see them denouncing Trump, it only makes them more devoted to Trump, because they think he's sticking it to the people who are sticking it to them. Now, this is, I think, a very simplistic level of analysis. We've certainly seen plenty of populists in the past. And, you know, in the past, many of them were Democrats, like, you know, Huey Long, George Wallace. But now all that populist anger has migrated into the Republican Party.
In the African-American community, there's a struggle between people who are high achievers and those in their peer community in the inner city who might view their advancement as a sign of, you know, lack of masculinity, that it's not cool to be smart. How far back does this go? Is it maybe even a reaction to the snobs of Europe?
Oh, yeah. This goes well beyond the African-American community. You have the exact same thing in many white working class communities, especially in Appalachia. I mean, there is a long tradition there of hostility to knowledge. And, you know, you can debate about where that comes from. David Hackett Fisher, one of the great historians of America, wrote a terrific book called Albion Seed, which traces the folkways of America back to the communities in the British Isles, from which the immigrants originally came in the 17th and 18th centuries. And, you know, the people who are now settled in places like Appalachia tended to come from the borderlands of Scotland and England, where they had a warrior culture, but not a culture that prized learning. Whereas, by contrast, the people who settled in New England came from a part of England where learning and education was much more prized, which is why, of course, you have all these colleges and prep schools and so forth in New England. Whereas, you know, in Appalachia, you tend to have a lot of people who sign up for military service. And obviously, you need both. You can't have one or the other. And I have great admiration for, you know, these working class whites who have performed so valiantly in our country's service over the centuries. But there is no question that there is a hostility to education there. And I think that is the core constituency that Trump is appealing to, because he's not just ignorant, he's proudly ignorant. He brags about how he doesn't read books. For him, this is a point of pride, and unfortunately it is for a lot of his followers as well.
If he were to win, what do you think the principal consequence to America would be in the early years?
You know, I can't even wrap my head around that. It would be such a catastrophe, because I truly believe that Donald Trump is the most dangerous and ignorant major party political candidate we've ever seen in American history. And I really regard him right now as the number one national security threat to the United States. If he were to actually try to implement these policies, to try to expel 11 million undocumented immigrants, to start trade wars with Mexico and China, to pull out of NATO, do all these things, the United States will become much less safe and much less prosperous. Our economy will go into a tailspin. Our security will be endangered. I mean, I don't want to be overly alarmist, and I generally have not been.
You're a smart guy. I mean, you've written great books. You're a credible person, and you're telling me that winning the election is a precursor for Donald Trump to essentially create a dictatorship in the United States.
You know, I think our institutions are strong enough that you're not going to have a Hugo Chavez or a Mussolini or a Putin here. But if you look at Donald Trump, those are clearly the people that he admires. I mean, he's never had one bad word to say about Putin. He's expressed admiration for Kim Jong-un. I mean, these are his tendencies. And unfortunately, the president has a lot of power. So even though he's not going to be able to impose a dictatorship, I mean, if you think about the kind of abuses that we had under the Nixon presidency, you know, abusing the FBI and the IRS and so forth, I would be very, very worried about what Donald Trump would do. I've never been worried about this, but I am actually worried about this now.
Max Boot is the Gene Kirkpatrick Senior Fellow in National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.